Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
The first round of the men's March Madness college basketball tournament begins today, and for the first time in Massachusetts, you can legally bet on it. The state's sports betting program launched at casinos a few weeks ago, and last week, betting became available on cell phone apps. But increased gambling is raising some questions. There are some who are concerned about problem gambling, especially among young people. Eileen O'Brien, who's a member of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission, is with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Talk with us about all of these new wagers that are going on in the state. So thanks so much, because it's complicated, right? It's huge.
It is. It's a huge industry.
We're seeing ads everywhere for gaming and new ways to gamble. So you've got a big job. So we sympathize, and we're very happy that you're with us. But I just want to start with some of the numbers that we heard this week, because we got some preliminary numbers. I think sports betting apps processed 8 million transactions over the weekend in Massachusetts, and the first full month of casino sports betting generated more than $300,000 in state tax revenue. So I'm wondering, is that surprising? Is that about on track? What do those numbers mean to you?
I don't think the numbers are surprising when you look at the other jurisdictions that have launched. I think if you look at other states with comparable populations to Massachusetts, we have a very active industry in terms of we have very rabid sports fans. We have sophisticated gamers. The applicants would come in and tell us these things. So in that sense, I think the numbers bear that out. They are on the higher end of some of the other states in terms of their launch weekends that have similar populations to us. We've had neighboring states that have had mobile betting and retail betting for some time on sports wagering. So there was a pent-up demand. I think the next month, as you get through March Madness and we get close to a full month of online, we'll get a better sense of what those numbers are actually going to be on an ongoing basis.
Remind folks of what is the state's take on those revenues. So when we say $300,000, what does that represent?
So there is the handle, which is the overall amount of money that was bet. There's a portion of that that's taken per transaction by the licensee. And then what is left in terms of the gross sports wagering revenue, there's 15% tax rate on the brick and mortar. The mobiles that launched on the 10th will be paying 20%. So that 15%, that $300,000, was 15% of what was ultimately taxable at the end of the month.
And that was from the brick and mortars.
Correct.
So now you'll get even more because you can get a higher rate from the apps.
And the activity, for the most part, is, I think the numbers are somewhere in the range of 90% of the activity in other jurisdictions happens on the mobile platforms.
Hmm. Wow. You know, I want to bring up something that an assistant attorney general actually talked about in terms of concerns. And I'm sure you have to weigh all of this as a member of the commission. It's part of your job. But first assistant AG Pat Moore discussed some issues with the Gaming Commission. And he said, he's really concerned about young people and how this accessibility, maybe the easy access and cell phone apps and what this might do, especially for young people. He gave a hypothetical situation to the Gaming Commission. And I want to play a little bit of what he said. Here it is.
Take, for example, a dorm of upperclassmen at one of Massachusetts's many colleges and universities. Inundated with advertising, one student realizes a referral bonus is available. Within hours, a dorm full of students have downloaded the apps, one benefiting from referring another. Is this the safe and responsible gambling that we intend to foster?
So that was a question from Assistant Attorney General Pat Moore brought to the Gaming Commission this week. What's your answer, Eileen O'Brien?
My answer is that we have consistently been the leader in responsible gaming for the brick and mortar side, and that we have crafted regulations to endeavor to continue to be the best in terms of protecting the consumer. I view my job as a commissioner in maximizing the benefit of what the legislature determined should be a legal activity in the Commonwealth and minimizing the risk. And for me in particular, I have spoken to Pat Moore, and I understand the concerns the Attorney General's office raised above and beyond the regulations that we've already put in place to protect minors. And we have incredibly robust, in terms of when you look at other jurisdictions in the United States, regulations governing advertising and marketing that govern if they are going to try to advertise in a venue that is not anticipated to be less than 25% of under 21, then they can't advertise in that market. Mm. Now, there are other mechanisms in place in terms of other options that are available. One of them is looking at how other industries treat referrals. You know, are they allowable? Are they capped? How are you going to treat them? Another concern is the mobile access, cell phones. This is a whole generation of kids growing up with access to cell phones. It's an incredibly addictive device. Man. They will be aging up into this population of, you know, people who are allowed to bet. There is a tremendous amount of opportunity we have also to do research. We have a very robust research branch of the MGC, and part of that is continuing to look at what's effective in terms of responsible gaming and positive play so that people can participate in this legal market in a way that protects them. And so in addition to the regulations that we have, we will continue to look at things like what Pat Moore brought up in terms of, you know, the impact of referrals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, referral bonuses. I mean, that's allowed at this point.
At present, it is allowed, yes.
Yeah, but you're looking at it, you would say.
The MGC is constantly looking at it. So we have regulations in place right now that are one of the strictest in some of the jurisdictions when you look at the United States. But we are continuing to look at that. We have a partnership with the Attorney General's Office and the Department of Public Health on these matters, and we are going to continue those partnerships. And they have come to the table with concerns about consumer protection and data privacy and protection of juveniles, all of which we also take very seriously. And so we're going to continue those conversations to see what else we can do as the market matures to make sure we're protecting the most vulnerable.
Hmm. I want to talk about advertising, because advertising is a big issue here. I want to play a little bit of an ad that's come out from the betting app DraftKings. We've been flooded with ads, right? Mm-hmm. You can't go anywhere without seeing some of these ads. But there's one from DraftKings that came out, and there are a lot of celebrity voices in it, too.
Betting is legal in Mass now, and DraftKings is our local sportsbook, founded right here in Boston.
Woo!
You want outsiders coming here telling you how to bet? Try a wicked awesome parlay!
No.
That's how they sound, David. They make me sick.
That's a bit of a DraftKings ad talking about David Ortiz, Hall of Fame Red Sox slugger. Of course, there's Dropkick Murphys playing in the background, very, very targeted to this market, homegrown comedian Lenny Clark. I mean, there's a lot there. But you recently had to take some ads down, right? Why did some ads have to come down, and what was the reasoning behind that?
So we've had ads. We have a process for if people see ads that don't comply with our rules, and there's a self-reporting requirement. I happened to see some ads myself watching streaming and watching TV where they had taken what was apparently maybe a national ad, changed it somewhat with graphics and voice for Massachusetts, but erroneously apparently listed credit cards as an option. Credit cards are not allowed to fund an account in the Commonwealth. And so they responded quickly. Change that, et cetera. That doesn't mean we're not going to look at it in terms of any consequences for putting the ad up, because we have a process for looking at violations, and the advertisements are part of it.
Right. And what about sort of celebrities in ads and sort of, you know, what that brings, the sort of high profile nature to the advertising? Is there, you know, what do you say about that? Are there any limits to how that's done?
So we had this conversation when we were crafting the regulations and the advertising in particular, because there are some countries in Europe that have started to ban celebrity endorsements right. in this industry. And it'll be interesting to watch what impact that has in terms of, you know, making sure you have responsible gaming. That there is a question in terms of the practicality of this for us in Massachusetts or in any state where there is no federal statutory scheme that governs advertising. And so particularly when you have a New England state and you're going to have advertising bleeding over borders. There's also a practical question in terms of what we can effectuate in the Commonwealth. But to me, that is a huge part of the advertising. And again, interesting to watch as Europe starts to, country by country, put some restrictions on that.
What happens if a company is in violation? I mean, are there fines? You know, what happens if they have a misleading ad or say something that they shouldn't be saying?
So there's a process that we have in place, and we're going through it right now on some other violations where we have an investigation and enforcement bureau that's part of our office. We, the commission, also felt that it was important for us to retain the ability to, rather than go through the route where they investigate first and then report to us, we as a commission have the ability to pull that right up to us because we want to do it quickly and we think it's important to move on it quickly. And we've done that. We have several in the pipeline right now. So we can set the tone and let it be known that we are serious about our regulations.
You know, I want to. Every online sports betting company that applied for a temporary license was approved, except for one. Is that right? With one vote against. You were the lone vote against the app Better, right? Which was co-founded by social media influencer Jake Paul. What were the concerns you had about Better?
Well, as I said at the time, there were parts of the responsible gaming that are embedded in that app that are actually laudable. The concerns that I had really had to do with the integration of a celebrity figure integral to the app who's also an athlete who comes from a period of time being in a show on the Disney Channel where he had a following of young people who are aging up with him. And my concern was that combination of factors, that I didn't feel that at this point that was the right choice for the Commonwealth given the integration of those factors and my concern about protecting youth and minors in terms of what was critical to the advertising is also going to be critical to counteract with responsible gaming measures.
Right. You know, we talked about some of the penalties for companies that don't follow. I wonder, do you have or is there any talk about having an inspection team now that it's gotten so big, right? Now that gambling has gotten so big and it's in so many areas, how do you keep tabs on it as a gaming commission? Will there be some sort of team of folks who will help you make sure that the regulations are being complied with?
So there's a couple parts to that. One is there are technical components that we have that ensure compliance. We have third parties, some of whom contract with the operators are at our direction, some of whom work with us to make sure there's compliance on the geographical components that and the know your customer, making sure you're 21 and up, that sort of thing. We also have an internal group that is the sports wagering part of our office that is expanding. And to your point, there are also third-party vendors that do certain things that I think do bear discussion, like monitoring advertising, looking at what your regs are and seeing, given the inundation that's out there, is that something that we want to do either in the short term or the long term to supplement what we have, which is a proven record in terms of enforcing our regs on the brick and mortar side.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, in terms of, we talked about March Madness and what's happening there. Do you expect that we'll see a lot of activity because of March Madness and what's going on? So what do you expect will happen in terms of the gaming world around this big sports event?
So it's my understanding that second only to the Super Bowl is March Madness in terms of the activity on the betting.
Right.
And so the numbers that you talked about at the beginning of this about the opening weekend will probably pale in comparison to the activity that we're going to see during March Madness. And then it will ebb and flow, obviously, given different sporting events. But this is clearly has a demand.
Right, especially in Massachusetts. You know, we should
Correct.
Say when we talk about the regulations and your role on the Gaming Commission, you came to the Gaming Commission after working in the Attorney General's office, right? So you've seen it from a lot of different sides. I wonder how you bring both of those things to your position on the commission and how you sort of do you think of yourself as an enforcer or?
So I started as a prosecutor and then I had a step slightly away from that where I was actually in the Inspector General's office and heading up the investigations group there and so shifted from criminal prosecution to somewhat of a regulator investigator. And this is a shift a little bit more to the pure regulator side. But I sit in the seat that is the criminal investigations and law enforcement seat. We all bring 5 different areas of expertise to the commission. So I absolutely bring that background in to how I view my role in, again, maximizing the benefit and trying to minimize the harm that would come from the industry.
Right. Is that the thing that you think is the biggest thing you're going to have to grapple with going forward?
The biggest thing, meaning sports wagering?
Yeah.
It is a new market. I mean, it's been, you know, not even 5 years since it's been, you know, expanding in the United States. It's been a rapid expansion. I think you're going to see, you know, contractions in the market, and you're going to see a maturity in the market. You're also going to see a maturity in the regulations. And so I think you're going to see a lot of activity and change in this industry going forward.
Yeah. What do you think is the thorniest thing that the commission's going to have to deal with going forward?
Yet to be seen. Every time I say that I think we've dealt with the thorniest part, something else comes up. We have the benefit of not being the first jurisdictions in the United States to launch these, and so we can learn from some of our fellow states. But I'm not going to say that something isn't going to come forward that's going to test how we want to regulate to make sure that we're fulfilling the mission.
All right. Well, Eileen O'Brien, member of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.